It's been 5 years since I've had a raise in pay. Way things are going, I could get laid off any day. Sure is hard living with all this pain. I know what I need. I need somebody to blame. Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some gold.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got no class.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
Let's send them back.
My neighborhood library is about to close. The school my kids go to is becoming a joke. Self-serving liberals blame it on corporate tax breaks. But that's propaganda. I know who I should hate. Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some gold.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got no class.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
Let's send them back.
Who's to blame for the potholes and flooding and drought?
It's all their fault. It's all their fault.
Who's to blame for inflation, unemployment, and everything I'm pissed off about? Who's to blame for the end of the good old days? Who's to blame for the fact that I can't get laid? Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs. Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got no class.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
Let's send them back. Send them back. Send them back.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
It's all their fault.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
They got some gold.
Teenage immigrant welfare mothers on drugs.
On
welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. You can hear us at accesssacramento.org, or you can download this program and previous programs at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com, or to find out about new programs, friend us at Facebook. Today's program is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Senior Attorney at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Kennedy was in San Francisco to promote The Last Mountain, a new film that features his efforts to end mountaintop removal coal mining in West Virginia. Dirty fuels should be forced to cover their full costs. Kennedy says not only could they not compete in the market, renewable energy would win. Kennedy argues our democracy is broken and the campaign finance system is a system of legalized bribery.
Virtually every farmer in the state of North Dakota wants to put wind turbines on their property. And you have huge mountains of private capital. I'm on the board of the biggest green tech venture capital firm in the country, which is located right here in San Francisco, Vantage Point, and by far the most profitable. They're among the top performing venture capital firms in any discipline, in any space. So they want to go into North Dakota and build wind farms. And big players like Siemens and Vestas and General Electric and Warren Buffett and T. Boone Pickens all want to go there. There's huge piles of cash surrounding the state of North Dakota waiting to flow in and build turbines on every property. Every farmer in North Dakota wants to build the turbines. Why? Because a North Dakota wind farm, a North Dakota cornfield is worth $800. If it's got a wind turbine on it, it's worth $3,000. We have the ability now to, with wind, to create prosperity in declining rural economies, to create jobs, and to enrich farmers and to allow them to hold on to their farms, which is a really critical part of democracy. The problem is the North Dakota wind farmer cannot get his product to market, the electrons to market, because the electrons will diffuse in our current lines before they cross the North Dakota border. So they can't reach Cincinnati or Cleveland, Columbus, St. Louis, New Orleans, or New York. And we need to build a grid system in our country. And the Obama administration is now doing this piece by piece, a unified national grid that will connect these, the renewable power generation centers to the markets in our country. The same way that Eisenhower built a national highway system back in the 60s, we need to do that with the grid, and we need to build a smart grid. And yesterday, the headlines in many papers across the country were that Obama's going to make this one of his primary objectives between now and the election, to start implementing the smart grid in our country, and that's very, very encouraging. And the third issue, the impediment that they face, is that we have an arcane, we have a balkanized system where we have 50 public utility commissions in the 50 states, and 120 control districts, each with their own arcane and Byzantine set of rules that restrict access to the grid. What we need, what the Obama administration understands, is a unified national grid that acts as a marketplace where everybody, people like me, I produce far more energy than I use in my home. I ought to be able to sell that surplus onto the grid and make market rates for it. Today, there's very few places where you can do that. Every American ought to be able to do that. We need to create a national market where everybody can participate, one that democratizes our energy system in this country, rather than one that creates oligarchies. And the economic system, the political system reflects the economic system. And if you have an energy sector that's controlled by a couple of people, you ultimately are going to have a politics that is controlled by a couple of large corporations, which is not good for our country. We need to create a marketplace that does what a market is supposed to do, which is to reward efficiency, to reward good behavior, which is efficiency, and to punish bad behavior, which is inefficiency and waste. Right now, we have a marketplace that is governed by rules that were written by the incumbents, coal, oil, and nuke, to reward the dirtiest, filthiest, most poisonous, most destructive, most addictive fuels from hell, rather than the cheap, clean, green, wholesome, safe, and patriotic fuels from heaven. And we need to change that dynamic around.
So what are some... Our guest today at Climate One at the Commonwealth Club is Robert F. Kennedy, Jr. I'm Greg Dalton. What are some specific policies that should be implemented that would level that playing field between incumbents and clean technologies?
Well, it's really about, like I said, about creating a market. And when you create that unified market, national market, you turn every American into an energy entrepreneur, every home into a power plant like mine, and we can power our country then, based upon American resourcefulness and entrepreneurship and what Franklin Roosevelt called American industrial genius, rather than Saudi Arabian oil. We've done this before. We built, all the great infrastructure in our country was built by government. That's the role of, one of the primary roles of government, the canal system, the road system, the highway system, the railroad system, the airline system, airports, were all built by the federal government, and then private entrepreneurs come and create wealth. But the infrastructure has to be built by government. So, in 1979, we built an ARPANET grid in this country, which was a grid for the Internet that connected every American home so everybody could participate in the Internet. A year later, and I actually watched a documentary on last night on TV about this, it was very interesting about the growth of the ARPANET. But a year later, in 1980, the CEO of IBM said that PCs, personal computers, were a dead-end technology. Okay, and a lot of other computer companies made that bet, like Dell and MCR and Honeywell, and they're out of the computer business because they just bet wrong, because they didn't see what the market was going to do to revolutionize computer technology and put it and democratize it, put it in the hands of everybody. Well, today, everybody, because we built that marketplace, everybody has a PC. And what happened to the cost of information? It plummeted to almost zero. In fact, I would say zero. One of the companies, that Vantage Point has is a company called ChaCha. Has anybody here heard of it? Raise your hand if you've heard of it. See, it's just young people.
Yeah.
So anyway, ChaCha is a company that you dial on your cell phone, ChaCha, C-H-A-C-H-A. It's 247-247. And you can ask any question that you want, and usually within a minute, they'll answer that question. It's free and free. They make their money by putting little advertisements while you wait. But it's free information forever. I was in China the other day, and I was showing this to some Chinese friends of mine, and I said, ask me any question. And they said, okay, what was Mao Zedong's favorite lunchtime meal? So I put it in there, and it comes back in 30 seconds, spicy brown bean soup over fried rice. You can ask anything. When is he going to stop talking? When is, you know, when, you know, what's the meaning of life? Anything you want, and he'll try to answer it. So this is free information forever. And it happened because we built that grid. The same thing is going to happen to electrons as soon as we build a national grid for electricity. In 1996, we built a national grid for telecommunications. Bill Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act. He ordered all the baby bells to unify their lines and to lift all the restrictions so anybody could get onto the lines and sell their product. The lowest cost provider prevails in the marketplace. This spawned a telecommunications revolution in our country, and all these little gadgets that we have, like iPhones and stuff, are the offspring of that revolution. But what happened to the cost of telecommunications? Well, it plummeted to virtually zero. 2 days ago, I saw an advertisement, which, and these ads are ubiquitous on TV now, from a company called Vonage that promises unlimited overseas, long distance, and local calls for $14. That's practically free. Now, about 3 months ago, I called Miami, from Miami to London, and the call for 5 minutes, the call cost me $74. That's the old way of doing things. The new way with the national grid is free telecommunications forever. The same thing is going to happen to electrons as soon as we build this national grid for electricity. Now,
how is a broke federal government going to invest this much money to build a national grid?
Well, you know, the grid itself is not going to cost that much. The grid itself, it will probably cost about $250 billion to build a smart grid that reaches most of America and that, you know, that can do the things that we need to do, like can send signals through the line, allow the utilities to send a signal through the line to turn off the hot water boilers in a million homes for 15 minutes in order to avoid the peak demand that is the most expensive part of our electrical system. If you eliminate a peak, you save enough natural gas in our country to power the entire U.S. Passenger car fleet. So, and we can do that just by using the grid smartly. A grid to send a signal to turn off all the electric toothbrush rechargers, you know, to turn off your swimming pool recirculators and all of these things. You don't care if somebody turns them off for 15 minutes and you sign something. It can go into your car and borrow the stored electricity in your car, in your battery, whether you got a plug-in hybrid or a plug-in car. And so we need to build a smart grid. That costs very little. About 4 months of the Iraq war, we have a whole national grid in this country. Then to build the generation for that grid will cost about, and I can tell you this, and let me give you an example that shows you how. Right now, one of our portfolio companies is called BrightSource. And BrightSource is building the biggest power plant in America, which is in the Mojave Desert, and it's a solar thermal plant. This is not solar voltaic of the kind that your grandmother used to bolt to her roof. This is a mirror farm in the desert where they put a turbine on top of a tower, a giant scaffold, and they surround it by concentric rings of mirrors that are manipulated by computers to reflect sunlight onto that turbine. And 20 minutes after the sun comes up in the morning, that turbine's at 750 degrees Fahrenheit. It's a very efficient way of generating energy. We're building this plant in 3 years. Well, it takes 10 years to build a coal plant. We can build this in 3 years. It costs $3 billion a gigawatt to construct. That's the same price it costs to build a coal plant. It's one-fifth the price it costs to build a nuke plant. So, and once you build our plant, it's free energy forever. Because the photons are hitting the Earth for free every day. All we have to do is construct the infrastructure to pick them up and put them in the line. Once you build that coal plant, now you got to go to the Appalachians, cut down the mountains, ship them across the country on rail yards, warp every rail in this country so we can't have a high-speed rail, burn the coal, poison every fish, kill 60,000 people a year, cause 10 million asthma attacks, you know, acidify the lakes and all the other costs. Why don't you build an oil plant for the same $3 billion? And remember, ours is then free. Once you build that oil plant, now you got to go to Saudi Arabia, punch holes in the ground, bring up the oil, refine it expensively, genuflect to the sheiks who despise democracy and are hated by their own people, get in periodic wars that cost us $3 trillion, escorted across the Atlantic with a military escort that Exxon doesn't pay for, you and I do. Then you spill it all over the Gulf, spill it all over Valdez, burn the oil, and poison everybody in our country. And so the big costs occur after you build the plant. Once you build our plant, it's free energy forever.
John, okay, John Bullard, the CEO of
Let me finish this. He's talking too much. Let me just finish them to answer your question to the math. Here's the math. We use 1,000 gigawatts in peak demand in our country. 500 of those, so that's what we got to replace. 500 of those are carbon-based. So that's what we really have to replace to have free energy. The others are nuke and hydro, et cetera, that are essentially free operation at this point. So 500 at 2% growth over the 50-year life of power plant, you have to double that. But you can cut it back in half by conservation, by building codes and, you know, and appliances, what we call megawatts, which are the cheapest form of energy. So conservatively, we have we have 1,000 gigawatts to replace. At $3 billion a gigawatt, which is what wind and solar cost, that is about $3 trillion, which is less than the cost of the Iraq war. So for less than the cost of the Iraq war, we can have free energy forever in this country. And then what happens? That's the biggest tax break that has ever occurred, and it's permanent, because the biggest cost to businesses and individuals in this country is our energy cost. And if you can eliminate those, which we can, then you suddenly have an advantage over the rest of the world in everything you produce, plus all the technological advantages that we get from incentivizing entrepreneurship and imagination and invention in order to construct and build this grid. And, you know, I'll just say final point, which is this, that in 1929, just in October, just before the stock market crashed, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was at 385. In 1942, the Dow Jones was at 85. So the big stimulus package that FDR passed that we now call the New Deal kept thousands of Americans, millions of Americans alive, millions of farmers on their farms, millions of Americans in their home, thousands of banks from folding. But it was not robust enough to restore the market economy. Then in 1940, President Roosevelt gave a famous speech, one of the most important speeches in our history to our country. He went on the radio and he said, World War II is on the horizon. Remember, Pearl Harbor was still a year away, but we were doing the Lend-Lease program with England. And he said, we're going to build 50,000 aircraft a year. His aides later admitted that he had torn that number out of thin air before he sat down 5 minutes before. The year before, we had built 2,800 aircraft in our country. He said, we're going to build 50,000. He said, we're going to build 25,000 tanks. We're going to build a ship a day, a battleship a month, an aircraft carrier every 3 months. We're going to do it every month until the war is over and won. People laughed at him. He was ridiculed by editorialists on the left and the right. They said no industrial mobilization has occurred of this magnitude in history. He's bitten off more than he can chew. But Roosevelt went immediately out to Detroit. And he told the automakers, you're not building automobiles anymore. You're building aircraft and you're building tanks and half-tracks and amphibious vehicles and bombs and detonators. Within 6 weeks, they had retooled their plans. Within 6 months, they had met his production goals. Within 12 months, they had surpassed them. The following year, we built 96,000 aircraft in this country. We had full employment. 160,000 women went to Detroit and found jobs where they'd been blackballed before with Rosie the Riveter. 200,000 blacks went to Detroit and found jobs where they'd been blackballed before. We had full employment. Everybody had cash in their pocket, and they began investing it in the marketplace again. And the market recovered, gave us a middle class, which gave us stability and prosperity for the next 50 years and made our country the envy of the world. And today, we have a huge advantage over Roosevelt, because Roosevelt was building stranded assets, planes and tanks and bombs that were being sent over to be blown up that had no lasting benefit to the American people. Today, we have the capacity to build infrastructure, pylons that stretch across the country with wires down the existing right-of-way and railroads to bring North Dakota wind to the markets in New York, et cetera, with DC lines that don't lose the electrons. We to employ thousands of Americans erecting wind turbines on every farm in the Midwest, and millions more to bolt photovoltaics to every south and facing roof in America that wants them, and millions more to blow in cellulosic insulation to every home in America that wants those. And at the end of that, we have an infrastructure that will give us free energy forever. And then you have the entrepreneurs and the businesses take over and take advantage of this huge advantage that we now have. And that will give us prosperity and jobs. We already have in this country, you know, we crossed a critical milestone this year. We built in this country more wind and solar last year than we did all the generation capacity, than all the incumbents combined. And that is a critical milestone in the adaptation of disruptive technologies. The year that you build more than of one than the other. It's like flat screen TVs 10 years ago, everybody said it'll never happen. It cost $10,000 a piece. 5 years ago, for the first time, we sold more flat screen TVs than we did vacuum tube. This year, the last vacuum tube manufacturer closed down. Right? That's how fast it can happen. Once you hit that tipping point, which is the year you produce more of the one form of the energy than the other, nobody knows it because the other one is so dominant in the marketplace. Nobody notices it. But that is the milestone that you look for when the disruption, the displacement is about to take place. And we've done that in our country. And we have, you know, this is going to happen because, not because government tells it, but because the market is going to drive it there, because we can produce cars that go, you know, and that get 6 cents, that cost 6 cents a mile over the life of the car to drive, electric cars, versus an internal combustion engine that costs 60 cents. How long can they maintain that? It's just not going to happen. And we can produce energy for free. And so they, you know, oil and coal and all these incumbents have a huge advantage now because they own Congress and they own the Senate. But the market ultimately is going to drive us there, and it's going to drive us there fast. We're at the tipping point now, and you're about to watch the cascade.
We're about to go to audience questions also and see if you can ask a question. Point here, we're going to put the microphone up here, and I'll just ask one question and ask you again on this side to come around. You mentioned presidential leadership and your advisor to the Obama administration. The Los Angeles Times recently wrote an editorial saying that President Obama has been a bit of a disappointment on environment issues. He didn't deliver a climate bill. He has done some things on investing in light and high-speed rail and increased auto efficiency standards. How would you assess how well the Obama administration has done on energy so far?
Well, I would say that if the Obama administration did what it wanted to do, what President Obama wants it to do, that we would have done all the things that I just talked about. The problem is that our democracy is broken. The press is broken in this country. We have 30% of Americans now getting their information from talk radio, which is 95% controlled by the right. We have 22% getting their news from Fox News.
There's so many things going on in the world. Baby's dying, mother's crying. How much oil is one human life worth? And what happened to peace on earth? We believe everything that they tell us. They're gonna kill us, so we gotta kill them first. But I remember a commandment, thou shalt not kill. And how much is a soldier's life worth? And what happened to peace on earth? And the bewildered herd still believing everything we've been told from our birth. Hell, they won't lie to me, not on my own damn TV. But how much is a liar's word worth? And whatever happened to peace on earth? So I guess it's just due unto others. before they can do it to you. Let's just kill them all and let God sort them out. Is this what God wants us to do? And the bewildered herd still believing everything we've been told from our birth. Hell, they won't lie to me, not on my own damn TV. But how much is a liar's word worth? And whatever happened to peace on earth? Now, you probably won't hear this on your radio, probably not on your local TV. But if there's a time and you're ever inclined, you can always hear it from me. But how much is a picker's word worth? And what happened to peace on earth? But don't confuse caring for weakness. You can't put that label on me. The truth is my weapon of mass protection, and I believe that truth sets you free. And the bewildered herd still believing everything we've been told from our birth. Hell, they won't lie to me, not on my own damn TV. But how much is a liar's word worth? And what happened to peace on earth?
More from Great Speeches and Interviews after these messages.